Hi, Internet!
Hi, Internet. This is Old Geek Young Geek. It has been a while. That's okay, though. We've kind of been on a little bit of a hiatus.
We've been on a hiatus where we've been doing retooling.
Yeah. And so during this hiatus, we've discussed, you know, what kind of direction that we want to go, that we want the show to go in. And so we decided to take more of a broad stroke to the definition of geek, because it's not just all about nerd culture and video games and comic books and all that stuff. It's, you know, people who are passionate about what they do. So with the coming episodes, it's going to be a lot different from what you're kind of used to hearing on Old Geek Young Geek, but, you know, we still have a lot of good conversations and just a good time in general. So
I would say that we are diversifying, and we are going after a more diverse set of guests, and going to be covering a more diverse set of topics. A lot of it is because I just am not all that interested in discussing the minutiae of video games. Or it's not that I'm not interested, it's that maybe I'm not qualified, because I keep up with horror games because that's what I really, really love. But the rest of the video game world, I really, I'm not as interested in it as I once was. So I understand in broad strokes what's going on, but as far as the specifics and the day-to-day of the industry and whatnot, I just really am not following it because I don't have enough time and I don't have the inclination. So I don't really play many shooters, so I don't know anything about shooters. I don't know anything about what's going on with competitive gaming. All that stuff, I just no longer follow it, so I can't really talk about it on a podcast. I can, however, talk about horror games, because that's my thing.
Yeah.
So, and I can also talk about the artistic process in general, which is a lot of what I'm interested in as far as the guests that we get are people that are in different, that do different creative things,
mm-hmm.
to get a hold of where they tick, where they come from, because, you know, the idea of being a geek is one thing. But really, everybody's a geek who's passionate about something. So, you know, there's as many punk rock geeks as there are computer geeks, and there are as many, you know, model airplane geeks as there are geeks about movies or whatever. So we're going to hopefully diversify into a set of people broader than simply people into video games. And with that in mind, our first guest on the newly revamped Old Geek, Young Geek is the great Paul Hungerford, who is sort of an all-around geek. He's into movies, TV, video games and stuff, but he's also an actor, and he's taking his love of nerdy pop culture things and his love of acting and combining them into incredibly interesting nerd-oriented improv shows that he does in Los Angeles on a regular basis. So let's talk to Paul. Everybody, welcome to Old Geek, Young Geek, the Internet's podcast. I'm Steve Johnson, the Old Geek, and with me, as always, is Scott Pell.
Hello. I'm the Young Geek.
The Young Geek, yes. And this week we have a very special guest. He's a writer and an actor and a director, and his name is Paul Hungerford.
Hey, guys. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Paul. Welcome to the show. It's awesome to have you here.
Oh, it's so exciting to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
No worries.
Excellent.
So one of the reasons we asked Paul to be a guest is because he's the director of a theater in Los Angeles, and he has an interesting show coming up that we think would be of interest to our audience. Paul, will you talk about the show you have coming up?
Sure. We have The Improvised Generation. We do our best improvised version of a Next Generation show, if you will. So it's Star Trek The Next Generation, but improvised. It's not actually Star Trek. It's an improvised version of that television show. The same tone, same character relationships. There's no Jean-Luc Picard or Deanna Troi. Instead, we have our own crew and our own cast with their own characters on their own ship. But it takes place in the same timeline, and it's episodic, so it's canon.
It is canon.
Yeah, well, it's canon in relation to, you know, imagine, if you will, that there was much like DS9 happened at the same time as Next Gen. So they had to deal with the same political atmosphere. That's our universe, for lack of a better term. And each week that we do the episode, anything that's happened prior has to be, you know, in canon moving forward.
Hmm. Okay. Oh, that's interesting.
That is deliciously nerdy. I love like all the details that you have to like consider when like writing or like, you know, setting up the episode for this sort of thing. So like, this is basically like, it's an improv, a drama, I guess. Would you call it that? And like, it's, you're on your own USS. Well, it's not the Enterprise. It's a Starfleet ship.
That's right. We're the McGinley, the USS McGinley.
Okay. So you guys have your own crew, and you're going and doing things, and there's drama aboard the ship.
Exactly.
And it all takes place, you know, surrounding the events of Deep Space Nine or The Next Generation.
That's correct.
Okay,
that's correct.
Cool. So, yeah. Are you a part of the writers that creates sort of like the scenario for each week and each episode, per se?
Well, yes. How do I explain it? So at our theater, Impro Studio Theater in Los Angeles, we're in Los Feliz, and what we'll do is we'll bring in a live audience, and we have a character step out and, you know, welcome everybody. And basically what we do is we get that person to get a suggestion from the audience. Maybe, you know, let's say this, the suggestion is trees, right? We had a suggestion for trees. And we take that suggestion, and now we try to start an episode. There's no pre-planning. There's no conversation backstage about what to say. Mm-hmm. We have pre-designed characters. I play Commander Jack Deadman, who's kind of your Riker / Worf character, for lack of a better example. And we'll get a suggestion, and we'll start with like either a captain's log. Our captain will step out and start doing a captain's log, or we might just do a cold open where we'll be in a group scene or a couple of people will be together, and we'll just start talking in character, in relationship connection, and see what comes out of it. And usually what ends up happening is, because it's improvisation, either something goes horribly wrong or someone makes a mistake or there's a bump in the road, and we kind of use that to start getting us into something. Hmm. And we then have a lighting improviser and a sound improviser, two people who are up on stage, who are in the booth, and they will black out a scene or open a door, or, you know, a klaxon will sound. Hmm. Anything could happen, and we're all improvising together.
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's really, really fun.
Okay.
We did a really great run in earlier this year. We did 8 shows, but we sold out so many. We sold out every show that we had to add a show because so many people showed up at the last night.
Oh, wow.
That we actually had to try to squeeze in it. We actually squeezed it in another show.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. Then we went and did Kamikaze. And we've done a couple of satellite shows around town and outside of town. People have invited us to come do some stuff. And it's been crazy fun. It's a super fun show. It's light. It's fun. It's action-filled. It's silly. And it's just filled with joy because everyone's having so much fun.
Oh, that sounds awesome. So that has to be, like, a really huge thing for you to say, like, you know, you have a regular sold-out show every week. That has to be really awesome.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. I'm connected. Well, we just did what we called Nerd Night Cubed, which was 3 nights of nerd theme or geek themed improv. We had a group called The Show That Shall Not Be Named, which is a Harry Potter improv. We did a there was another group called Robot Teammate and the Accidental Party, which is an all musical group as performed by a bunch of robots. It's pretty incredibly entertaining. We had Twilight Zone Unscripted as a headliner, which is Impro Theater's main company. It's a group who perform genre-based improv around the world, actually. Mm. They do Twilight Zone, three episodes in 1 hour, and it kind of blows the back of your head off with how interesting it is. But another great group called The Resistance, which is all action based. They actually use mats because there's so much, they beat the living crap out of each other on stage because it's so action packed. The audience chooses the genre. And then we had, On Saturday, we had Camonot, which is like an improvised musical, medieval, genre. If that's a genre, it's like a subgenre.
Yeah.
And then so many other groups. I'm trying to, now I'm blanking on Saturdays. Oh, and then with Mission Star Mission, which is like Firefly meets Star Trek, kind of a, but wow, really silly and fun.
Yeah.
And then on Saturday night, we closed with, a group called Bearded Men West, and they do a Dungeons and Dragons, live campaign. So they play on stage, they do a story on stage with a main character, and that main character has a DM who's off stage. We had a guest DM named Bill Cavalier, which is his AKA the Dungeon Bastard. He's a character that kind of teaches you how to DM. Like, he kind of teaches you the right way to DM. When you're rolling those D-side 20s, make sure you put them, you know, it's like a lot of vibrato and bros. So he DM'd, and there's roles on stage, and things, our outcomes are based on those roles, just like in D&D, and it was a blast, just a lot of fun.
That sounds really cool, because like D&D in itself is sort of like an improv exercise.
Totally. Absolutely. Well said.
That's really awesome. So going back to your Star Trek show, how much research has to be done to like get in the role or the mindset of some of these characters? Because like there's a lot of Star Trek out there, and I'm personally not a huge fan. I've been a Star Wars guy myself, but
are you excited?
Oh yeah. I'm super excited for the new Star Wars. For those of you listening, we are recording on the day before the release of Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. I'm super stoked.
No spoilers.
Yeah, no spoilers, please.
Spoilers since
I don't know. Like the movie already has like a 93% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm like,
oh, that's right. I guess the reviews.
I guess the reviews are out. Either
I'm
way.
Not reading any
so
of them.
So back to Paul.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry,
it's
Paul.
Okay. But it's like there are a requirement of all your cast members to like have watched all the episodes of Deep Space Nine or Star Trek Next Generation. Like, how's that work? Are you just all a bunch of nerds or really quick witted people?
Well, yes to all of those things.
Yeah.
I would say it starts with, I think, you know, at its core, you know, storytelling is storytelling. Uh-huh. You know, whether you're telling whatever genre you're applying it to, in the end, we're all storytellers. You know, the idea that we have a character who has a want, and whether they achieve that want or that goal, that's what makes the story interesting.
Okay.
So there's that. So we are, as improvisers to begin with, we're on the quick-witted idea. That's what we do. We try to do a lot. Like you're saying, you already have an improv exercise when you're playing D&D. Well, you also improvise when you're walking through your life. There's no script. We're improvising right now. We're just kind of talking off the top of our heads based on what the context of our conversation is.
Right.
So in relation to Star Trek, what we did was first of all of us had a different way into the genre. So some people were original series, some were Next Generation, some were Voyager, which I don't even know why we let them in, but we did anyways. And what we did was, is we kind of started with the basics, like, okay, guys, here's what we want to do. Here's what we're trying to accomplish. Here's the types of stories we want to tell. I had the luxury of working for a man named Naren Shankar years ago, who was on Star Trek, The Next Generation. And he had all of this material in regards to what it was like to be a writer on that show. And in one of the Bibles from that show, from Star Trek, it talks about they're telling human stories. They're talking about, you know, doesn't matter about the technology or about the planet. Yes. What matters is these are human beings like a family and how their relationships are affected by the events that happen around them.
Right.
So that's at the core of all of this, is this is a group of people who care for each other and respect and love each other. And what happens around them and how they deal with it and take care of each other is what really makes it endearing. Mm-hmm. So we started with that. And then we said, well, go watch some Star Trek and then let's kind of reconvene. And, you know, I would like, you know, I got so nerdy. I was like, okay, here's what I think you guys need to watch. First of all, we're going to start with Best of Both Worlds and the Borg. And, you know, I just would nerd out. And so excited because that show is, and, you know, yes, I love the show. Yes, I'm a nerd and a huge geek. Mm-hmm. And to me, the show was just the best. It hasn't aged poorly, but it hasn't, you know, it hasn't like, it's not like when you go back and watch a Doctor Who episode with Tom Baker, you're like, 1970 what? You know, it's a little more, it's somehow it still holds up a little bit. It's still hanging in there. It hasn't gone away quite yet. Yeah. Next gen. And so I sent everybody away. We sent everybody away and we said, you know, watch these episodes and people would come back and ask questions and try to figure some stuff out. We'd go away again and come back and, you know, we were in development for about, 3 or 4 months from when we decided we were going to do the show, organizing auditions, organizing people, and getting everyone together.
Is there anyone in the show who was unfamiliar with Star Trek?
Yeah, we had a couple of people who were like, I only know the original series. I don't know the Next Generation. So in a way, that is not even knowing the series because they are quite different.
Oh, very different. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it just took a little time to get everybody kind of on the same page. But in a way, it kind of was also a blessing because we have one of our characters, my friend Scott Palmason, who plays a character named Dr. Alistair Scott, who he's kind of an old school doctor. His character is a little kind of from that. Because he was a Bones fan and because he loved the original series, his approach is kind of like, instead of having a Dr. Crusher who is a little more kind of like, you know, Tiger Mom in the, you know, 23rd century, Scott's approach is a little more Bones, but updated.
Uh-huh.
So he's got a little bit of an attitude. He loves to have his Manhattans and drink his Manhattans at 10 forward. But at the same time, he has these old school moral structure, or, you know, his moral point of view. So it made for a unique character, you know, and that's what we had to do. We auditioned a bunch of actors. Once we auditioned everybody and put our crew together, we then asked the crew to go away for a little while, think about what kind of characters you want to play after watching some episodes, and then come back and pitch us two characters. So then we put everybody up in front of the room, in front of all of us, and they have to kind of like a job interview, be interviewed or talked to in character. And we kind of get a sense of who they are and what they're, we ask them some questions, and then we go back and kind of we put a cast together based on that, a crew based on that.
Mm. That's very cool. Let me ask you some questions about Star Trek.
Okay, wait. Okay.
Does Cynthia Hall get you drunk?
No. Cynthia Hall has it's synthetic alcohol, which means that it tastes like alcohol, but there is no negative effect. Or, as I like to say,
positive effect.
Exactly.
Come on. Wasn't it sort of cheating for Deanna Troi to play poker with them?
Did she play poker with them?
Yes, she did.
I don't recall.
As an empath.
Yeah.
I would think you would not be able to bluff her. Am I right?
Right. Well, wouldn't you say the same thing about about Data? Like, isn't he like the ultimate stone face? Would you ever know?
You're right.
Right.
Because he played poker with them too.
Yeah.
And that's the worst poker game. Oh my god.
Yeah. I always loved that Data was the worst at it. Wouldn't he be the best at it? Because he could count cards and everything else.
Well, actually, you know what? Okay, I'm gonna geek out about this. Maybe the idea was that since he isn't a human, he wouldn't be able to empathize in the same way, so he wouldn't be able to tell when somebody was bluffing.
Yeah, that was always his problem. Yeah, he always commented on that. He actually says that to Riker at one point. He says, Commander, is that what they call a poker face? You know, and I think what I always enjoyed about the poker relationship was how much it said about Riker's character, because they use the poker game throughout the series to point out different characters' point of views. Like, Riker doesn't like it when in Best of Both Worlds, I can't remember her name now, the woman that's up against him who wants his job, they play poker together. And he ends up losing to her, and it's such a great, you know, chink in the armor for him in an episode where he's being challenged at every angle. So it's kind of neat. I always enjoyed the poker game scenes.
Who do you think was the
the worst captain? Everybody always talks about the best captain. Who do you think the worst one was? And I don't mean like as an actor. I just mean as a captain.
Okay. This is so hard. I just can't stand Janeway.
Okay. How come, what's wrong with Janeway?
I don't know. I find her decision-making process throughout the series. I tried really hard to like the series.
Is this because you hate women?
It is not because I hate them. I just hate powerful women.
I just don't want women to have any power.
I don't know. I don't think so. I hope not. I hope that's not what's really going on underneath. I don't think so. I have daughters and a wonderful wife. I feel, you know.
Two daughters.
Yeah, I have two daughters. So I don't – all right. Here's what I always felt about her.
Okay.
I felt like – all right, did you – in the second season of Star Trek, they had a woman named Dr. Pulaski come on board instead of Dr. Crusher. And I thought Pulaski –
Next Generation?
Yeah, Next Generation.
Oh, okay.
And she was so like – angry and moaning about everything. Data, you have no feelings. And it's all about it was always so craggy and grumpy and angry and miserable. And I felt like Janeway had no – I never felt like she had any positive, you know, positive attitude. I would think that if you're trapped in if you've been stranded on an island with a group of people and you're the leader, wouldn't you want to inspire hope? Wouldn't you want to inspire the idea that, look, we're going to get through this, and the only way we're going to get through this is we do it together? I felt like she was like, we're going to follow orders, and orders is what's going to make us survive. And it's like, oh, all right, Captain Ahab, you know, it just feels like it's like, I don't know if rules and regulations are going to help us survive out here in the middle of nowhere, you know? It just felt like she didn't inspire me. She didn't thrill me. That I wanted to be a captain. To me, captains like Master and Commander, Jean-Luc Picard, I know it's Captain Kirk, they inspired me. You know, even in Star Wars, you know, going over to that genre, what I always loved was that Han Solo was Captain of Millennium. He's called himself Captain of Millennium Falcon. I always loved that he was this confident anti-hero, you know? And same can be said for like, I'm trying to think of like other captains. Like here's another good captain, the Captain of the Guard in Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's such a sympathetic, and speaking of women, the who is Captain of the Guard for, Baratheon, when he dies and she becomes the sworn protector of Lady Stark. I love her. Because she is driven by a desire to succeed that's not coming out of force.
Are you talking about Brienne of Tull?
Yeah, to me, yeah, I like her character. Tremendous.
Yeah, she's a great character.
Exactly,
she really is a great character, and like you kind of root for her because like you understand that she's like a very, I guess, pure character. She's very driven by her duty, but she does inspire. Duty. Shut up. But like she's a great character. Like everyone
that's my point.
Yeah,
that's a perfectly well said. She inspires through her duty.
Yeah,
and
duty. Shut up.
You know, I can't help it. I'm sorry. And I feel like Janeway
you're
didn't
the old
do that.
Geek. You're supposed to be. Well, I guess you're not supposed to be, but whatever.
You know,
wise learned geek. I don't know. That's yeah. So, bring it back to your improv show with Star Trek. So the series has lots of memorable moments, like those poker scenes. What are some really cool moments that have come out of your improv show that you look back and like, wow, that was actually really cool?
Wow, that's so great. I would – oh, gosh, what a great question. I have three very specific moments. One moment was what we do is one of the cast – because the cast is so big, we pick an actor to be our guest star each week. And so that person – is not dressed up in uniform. They're dressed up in all black, mm-hmm. and they can use props and costumes from, you know, that we have on the sidelines. And during our show, about week, I was like our fourth or fifth show, a guy by the name of Paul Bonasak was playing a guest star,
mm-hmm.
and we had done this setup where our hero, our captain was talking to an ex, was watching a memory bank of, what do you call it, a video, like a personal log of talking to her, the guy she's in love with. Mm-hmm. And a mistake happened where he thought he was coming out on stage, but he didn't come out on stage. And then he backed up for a second and she labeled that was a glitch in the video, and the video kept going. Well, he made a mistake in the storytelling and didn't repeat it exactly correctly. And she made him do it again a couple of times, and it started looking like a video. The video wasn't working. If you were watching, something was glitching. Mm. And so that led to the next thing and the next thing. Long story even longer, I put out a phone call to the character's actual to her boyfriend. Mm. And he shows up on the ship, and in the middle of the scene, Paul, playing this character, asked me who I was. I said, Captain, what are you talking about? We've known each other for years. And he says, I don't know who you are. Now, why don't you introduce me to who the captain of the ship is? I said, you know who the captain of the ship is. He said, are you going to tell me who it is? Because I don't know who it is. And literally, I feel like my face must have went white, because the look on his face was like, I got you, Paul. I'm going to twist the knife. And what he did was he yanked the rug out from all of us. We thought he was doing one thing. And technically what he did in that moment was we call it getting into danger. Uh-huh. He twisted what looked like the way the story was going, and he turned it on us. So now none of us knew where the story was going. Oh, and wow. Now we were just had to act on instinct. Oh, and dang. Suddenly it turned into one of the all time best episodes, because it just was so organic. And it turned out he and the captain were taken over by aliens that had done earlier, that they had kind of unintentionally set up earlier. And it turns out that the whole episode, thanks to Matt Pittner, thanks to the setup scene, Matt had set up even before that in the teaser that they were going to, him and Boots were going to go to the holodeck at some point. Well, it turned out the whole thing was an episode that took place in the holodeck. And Matt buttoned the entire episode by during a battle scene with the two enemies. He said, freeze program. And you heard the whole audience go, what?
That's awesome.
And everybody just was like, what? And he's like, and the character he was playing against, she froze for a split second. And then she realized, oh, we're in the holodeck. You could see it, like the look on her face. And she goes, oh, I thought we were going to finish this. And he's like, are you sure you want me to keep the safety protocols off? Because, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, no, I like it dangerous. And the audience just erupted in applause. And the applause ends. They destroy the bad guy. The thing ends. And they end up having this romantic moment at the end where they almost kiss. And the scene ends. And the audience just lost their mind. And we were losing our minds on stage, because the whole thing became the most fun episode I think I've ever been a part of. Wow. And the other two were a character on board the ship is an ex-girlfriend of mine. Mm-hmm. Or we were in a relationship for a long time, and that relationship's over with, but we still have all this tension. And so one day we got into an argument on the bridge, and the captain says, you two need to settle this, in the dojo. So we end up going and having a batlet battle, a space work batlet, and she pretty much kicks my butt, my character's butt, because she just keeps tripping me and I, beating the hell out of each other. And the audience just loved it, absolutely loved it, because it was all this space work action.
Yeah.
And it was totally violent and wonderful. And she kicked my butt and everybody loved it. And and then at the end of the episode, what made it so fitting was at the end of the episode, there's this nice moment between the two of us. And I, and I said, well, don't worry, I'll always be there. And she's like, it was like this really great moment where the two characters, though they are not maybe lovers anymore, they're still kind of connected, and yeah, that they still care for each other. But it, and it just made the audience love it. I would say the other episode that comes to mind is what we called the we called it the Jeffrey's Tube episode, where characters during this show, characters ended up having to go into the Jeffrey's tubes, of course, to fix something. But they were also being chased by the baddie. So we had these moments where characters were on stage talking, and somebody would go by in a Jeffrey's tube, and then another character go in another direction. So it was like a Warner Brothers cartoon where it was like dun 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 So really lucky. It's been a fun show. I look forward to doing it again in March.
That's really cool. I'm trying to imagine like the kind of set that you work on, because like in Star Trek, like there's traditionally like the bridge where everyone's kind of hanging out, but like with stuff like the Next Generation, they got the holodeck. They have all these different, you know, hallways. And,
there was
know.
A holodeck in the original series, Scott.
Well,
there
I was. Don't. I don't know that.
There was.
Was there?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I said, I don't really know much.
All right,
about
I got
Star
a question
Trek.
About the holodeck since we're talking about.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah.
Okay. At least on the original series, and Paul, correct me if I'm wrong here, but every time they step into the holodeck, something goes wrong, and then they're really going to die. So it's not just the holodeck. Like, wouldn't you think that they would either fix it or just go like, look, we can't use the holodeck anymore, you guys. It's terribly dangerous.
I don't think I would go in there, man.
Listen.
I don't know. I always feel I do think that it often goes wrong a lot. It's easily to – it's not that hard to manipulate it. But I don't know. I never felt like it always goes wrong.
On the old, well, I don't know. I don't know about the – Next Generation. I mean, I've seen most of the Next Generation, but it's been a while, so I don't really remember all that much about the holodeck episodes.
Yeah.
Okay. After the Next Generation, I totally lost interest in Star Trek. I tried to like some of the other shows. Was I missing anything or?
No, I couldn't stand any of them. After Next Generation, I gave up. I tried DS9.
I tried to watch Scott Bakula one.
Oh God! God bless Scott Bakula. I like him a lot. I just didn't care. I just don't care. I mean, we got a new one coming out in 2016 or 17.
Oh, yeah?
New TV series coming out, so I'm looking forward to that. But I don't know. I feel like lightning in a bottle, you know?
Yeah.
Next Generation was lightning in a bottle. It just was everything I wanted it to be when it was. The storylines were fantastic. Patrick Stewart was fantastic. That entire cast, I just thought they were all great. You know, I think other than, like, I think I could pick, like, three or four episodes from the entire run of that show that I just don't like. But even the bad ones are like, I guess, you know, I can leave it on in the background while I, you know, cut the grass. I don't know what that means. But, yeah.
Hey, I know that Will Wheaton does some improv here in LA. Have you guys approached him and said, hey, why don't you come be a guest on our Star Trek?
Not yet. I've been trying to do that. So, Will, if you're out there, you can hit me up on the Twitter at Feudio Paul. And we can chat it up. But I know him through Acme Comedy Theater. He was over there, I think, for a little while. Alicia Day was over there for a little while. I don't remember if he was over there or just like a guest. But I know Alicia Day. Felicia Day was over there for a long time.
Was she at Acme?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
How about that?
So I haven't made that connection kind of follow through yet, but – I think we've got a couple of things. There's rumors that Tim Russ from Voyager might join us. He was actually in TNG as well and in the movies. He was in one of the movies.
Cool.
So, you know, it's a lot of hurry up and wait in Hollywood. Everybody, you know, wants to do it until they don't want to do it.
Right, until, it comes down to actually doing it. I can see
that. Yeah. But, yeah, not yet, but hopefully we'll get him. That'd be really fun. I mean, I know a lot of people through Impro who have wanted to have guest stars come on, but the challenge is sometimes it's the best of times. We're also taking a huge risk because, you know, we are trying to get through 45 minutes, 50 minutes of a story. And even though that sounds so, you know, how hard could it be? You know, if you've ever seen bad improv, it can go downhill pretty quick.
Yeah. And I have noticed that because Robin has done some shows with special guests.
Right.
And you have to really know how to use a special guest.
And take care of them, yeah, totally.
Yeah, because, like, if somebody doesn't do improv, they are going to be lost during your show. You know what I mean? Because it's not an easy thing to do at all. And a person can be a great actor and not be very good at improv.
Right.
You know, so.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. Stop talking about improv.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit more about Star Trek. So you're obviously a fan of the Next Generation, and that was your Star Trek of choice. That was years ago. Years ago, decades. What do you think of the new Star Trek movies? Because they're a lot different than the Next Generation. I mean, like, sure, like the Next Generation was a TV series, and that has like different formatting of storytelling, but you know, in general, like Star Trek Next Generation was kind of slow, but like really smart and intelligent, whereas these new Star Trek movies that I really enjoy are really supercharged in action and high octane and all that stuff. So, like, do you think... I don't know, I guess I just want you to, like, nerd out or, you know, just kind of nerd rage against or for them, if you like. What's your thoughts on the new Star Trek movies? Are they Star Trek? Are they really Star Trek? Or are they something else?
All right. They're something else. Well, I'm biased.
Okay.
So, all right. So, first of all, I understand the desire to reboot a series. I get that there is this need to reboot it. I don't know why we needed to reboot it, but okay, we rebooted it. I don't know why we can't just tell new stories, or why can't we just have a new... Why did we need to reboot it? I don't get it. I guess that's what they want to market it as, so okay, that's what you're going to market it as. Mm-hmm. It's a whole new cast. It's a whole new everything. Then they chickened out and made it an alternate timeline.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, did they? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's an alternate timeline. Or not a timeline. It's an alternate universe. So because of the way things happen, it's happening parallel. Those other things happened and they will continue to happen, but this is an offshoot that's going in this direction. So JJ did a fine job with the reboot. I thought he did a good job with the original, with the first movie. I think it's a standalone. It's a good film. I hate the second one. Mm-hmm. It starts off okay. It becomes a weird political thriller in the middle. And then it, like, who the hell knows what it's about in the third act? The third act is like, my brain is going to explode. But overall, I mean, they're not horrific, but I just don't care. I just don't care. I would rather have had new characters and new discoveries and new things to grow and discover, what, you know. So I don't hate them.
Right.
What I don't understand is a lot of the choices that were made along the way. Like, an example is, like, have you seen the trailer for the new one?
Not yet. But I know that
Idris Elba's in it. I think I'm out of Star Trek. I'm just out.
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw the first one of the movies, and I was like, yeah, all right, I don't need to see any more movies like this. It's good.
Okay.
I'm good.
I'm out. Yeah, I appreciate that. I really do. I have to say that, all right, so that in the trailer, it's directed by the guy who did Fast and the Furious, for Fast and Furious.
Really?
Okay.
The first Fast and Furious.
Hmm.
Is that with Justin Lin? Is that his name?
I don't know. I don't think that's the guy with the first Fast and Furious. But I was just reading something about him. He's directing cheap horror movies now.
Well, I think like Fast and Furious was like number 6, and The Fast and the Furious was the first one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But either way, Paul, I think that you're right. Like at the top of the rant, like saying that it was all about marketing. Like that's how they wanted to market it, because like if it wasn't that familiar name of Star Trek and Kirk and Spock, you know, it could have just been like another sci-fi epic, which, you know, standing alone, changing around like the ships and, you know, the you know, technology that they use, just, you know, changing a few things around, it could have been like its own movie, you know, really apart from Star Trek. It didn't really have to be Star Trek because it didn't really seem to have that same feel of Star Trek. Even going back to like the older Star Trek movies like Wrath of Khan, you know, that was still like a different sort of feel.
Right.
So
it looks like he directed his third feature film was Tokyo Drift, and he did a great movie which I love called Better Luck Tomorrow, which is an awesome film. And I'm sure he's a great director, but there's a motorcycle jump in the trailer, guys.
Oh, wow.
There's a motorcycle jump in the trailer.
Well, because that's what I go to Star Trek for.
Well, that's...
Motorcycle stunts.
And really, as soon as I saw that, all I can think of is, which is what we all think of, what do you think of when someone has got a motorcycle and they're jumping over it or something? What does everybody think of?
Well, I think of Evel Knievel, but I'm...
Okay, that's fine. How about you, young nerd?
I think of the Fonz jumping a shark.
We have covered all things that need to be covered. This is exactly it. You think, first of all, Evel Knievel, everybody wants to be Evel Knievel at my age. We all wanted to be Evel Knievel. He was the coolest guy in the world. And then we think of the other cool guy, which was the Fonz. And the Fonz, we're talking about jumping the shark. They literally, in the trailer, go, we jumped the shark.
Wow. That's amazing.
To me, that's all. That to me, that's where they went to, and it's only the third movie. It's not like we're six movies in.
Right.
It's the third one. So they pretty much crumbled under its own weight. They had one good movie to launch it. The next two sucked. I'm sorry. I don't care. And I'm done. The bad guy looks like Vosh from Star Wars. Are you a Clone Wars fan?
The series, the action series. No.
No. Okay.
Really?
Wait.
So
wait.
You're like Geek Light is what you're telling me.
I kind of am. Yes.
Okay.
But I like
That's
video
fine.
Games.
I'm not going to judge.
I mean, like I'm really hardcore.
Scott's a video game guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The, your nerd cred popped back up. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for reissuing that.
Yeah, that's okay.
I would have to go down to the DMV and get that reissued.
Oh, that's the worst. You don't want to do that. I'm glad that worked out.
Thanks.
But in all seriousness, it just doesn't work for me. It's just not working for me. So meow meow meow. Anyways,
yeah.
I was just reading this review of Poltergeist, like the remake of Poltergeist.
Yeah, what did you think of that movie?
I didn't see the remake.
Why not? What the hell?
Because again, what do I need to see a remake of Poltergeist for? The original's fine.
There's no need to remake that movie.
I know. Here's the point this reviewer made, and this is Alan Scherstel, who writes for the Dallas Observer. He said, Poltergeist 2015 is to Poltergeist 1982 what today's shipped frozen to the Pizza Hut dough is to the kneaded on-site pies that the chain's stoned cooks tossed in the Reagan era. Same kind of thing, with the same shape and some shared ingredients, but the texture's gone limp and there's no sense of occasion about it, and there's some unpalatable goop stuffed in the crust. In a pinch, it beats not having pizza, but just barely. That's how I feel about all reboots.
That's so true.
Yes. Well, not all. I shouldn't say all. Some are great. You know, some reboots are fantastic.
Like what?
I like the Evil Dead reboot.
I'm surprised to hear you say that.
Did you like it?
I did not. I thought they started strong and it ended poorly. It's not really hard to remake that movie or reboot that movie, in my opinion. And the choices that start happening in that movie, there's certain things that happen that just make me crazy. In the first movie, everything starts going wrong. Demons start showing up and everything goes afoul.
Right.
In this movie, in the remake, I felt like the demons don't really show up, do they? I guess kinda.
Sort of.
Well, kinda. Sort of is your response. Sort of.
There's scary stuff in it.
And it didn't work for me. I tried really hard. It didn't work for me. I also think there was a little bit of a lack of they could have easily taken advantage of the original movie and had a little more fun with the, because it feels like, did they remake, in your opinion, were they remaking Evil Dead or Evil Dead 2?
It did seem somewhere between the two of them.
Right.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Because you couldn't remake the vibe of the first Evil Dead. You just couldn't, because the reason it has that feeling to it is because they had so little money and such a talented director, and now they have so much money and just another director. You know what I mean? Like, it's the opposite almost.
Yeah. I agree.
How about the remake of The Hills Have Eyes? I thought that was really great.
I thought that was good. Yeah. That was pretty good.
I was never a huge fan of the original, but man, that remake was great.
Yeah, I think the remake benefited from movies like Wrong Turn.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think a lot of that. I think like The Hills Have Eyes benefited from the success of Wrong Turn.
I could see that.
And like Wolf Creek to me is a good example of doing that genre correctly.
Yeah.
No. Anyways, but I'm
so
a judge.
There's no reboots that you like? None?
Let's see here. Best reboots. I'm trying to think. I can't even think of any reboots, because as soon as I hear it's a reboot, it's almost never going to be something that I'm going to chase.
Like, yeah, you just don't go to it, yeah.
Honestly, yeah, it's not like I go out of
my way. Especially if it's something I like. Like Poltergeist. I mean, why would I go see a remake or a reboot of Poltergeist?
I would agree with that. I thought the Incredible Hulk, the third reboot, was good.
Were there three reboots of Incredible Hulk?
Or just the Hulk?
Because there was the one Ang Lee did, which I'm the only person who liked.
Yeah, you are. Dread was good.
There you go, okay.
Dread was a good reboot.
I heard that Dread was a knockoff of the, I think it's a Filipino, or, I don't know. It's a movie called The Raid, and it's really awesome, and I feel
Oh, yeah, The Raid's great.
Yeah, I feel like, well, not what I feel like. I've heard that Dread, the newer one, is just a straight rip of that, but with Dread. That's what I've heard.
Yeah, that's a good call. I can definitely see that.
Does Fury Road count as a reboot? I guess not.
No, I don't think that it was. Because, like, it was, it's still, like, the original writer and director, so.
Oh, right, right, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's sort of like a continuation or another story within that universe.
I know, it's weird. There's really no specific rules for what's a remake and what's a reboot and what is either of the above.
But I feel like if you do a reboot or a remake or something like that, you should add something new to it or, like, try and switch it up so that something that, you know, still kind of feels like what you're, you know, inspired by, but still create, like, its own entity.
I got one.
All right.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Mm. Oh, there you go. That's interesting. All right. I'm with you on that. The original Planet of the Apes really hasn't aged very well.
It hasn't. I really like Rise of the Apes. I everything about that franchise, what do they have? I thought it was great. I thought they crushed it.
Hmm.
I thought both movies were great. I thought they were really good, personally. But that's just me.
Yeah.
I like the original Planet of the Apes as sort of a fun curiosity, but man, those movies, they're sort of hard to watch.
Yeah, they're very talky.
They're talky, they're heavy-handed, yeah, and like
they're good sci-fi in my opinion, because they do. For me, science fiction needs to use modern-day issues, and then we try to approach them from a different way using that storytelling technique. I thought Batman Begins.
Oh yeah, technically a reboot, huh?
Yeah, because of the origin story of Batman once again.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean that was a good one. But anyhow,
Friday the 13th was pretty good.
Oh, that's right. There was a new Friday the 13th, kind of quote unquote.
I think, like, that it's weird when there's a reboot of a movie that's, like, 3 years old, like they did with Spider-Man. Because wasn't it, like, the original Sam Raimi Spider-Man, and then, like, I don't know, 5 years later they rebooted it?
Yeah. They did The Amazing Spider-Man, which...
Which was awful.
Yeah. Was it? I didn't see it, again.
Did you like it?
No, I didn't see it, but I've only heard bad things, so... Yeah. I wasn't... Well, like, that's the thing, it's like, all right, I heard that this movie isn't that great, so, all right.
Let me switch the question around. Right. What hasn't been rebooted that you think should be?
Oh.
Either movies or video games.
Question.
Oh. If there's a video game to be rebooted or remade, it is Jet Force Gemini for the Nintendo 64.
That's a great call.
That game rules, and it would benefit from modern-day control play styles, like with dual stick and first-person shooters. That game is made for it. Remake that, maybe make it into a cover-based third-person shooter, or not. It doesn't matter. The game had a gun that fired 3 rockets at the same time, and I want it. Also had a dog with hover boots, and I want that too.
You know, you don't really own it. It's digital.
Yeah.
Scott does, though.
Yeah.
To him, it's real.
What was it, Star Fox?
Star Fox?
I always felt like that could have used a good old-fashioned reboot.
You know.
They did, though, didn't they?
No, they didn't do a reboot, but there was a couple other games after Star Fox. There was Star Fox Adventure on the GameCube, which was just terrible. Then there was Star Fox Assault, which was kind of mediocre. They tried to make it cool where, like, you could land your R-Wing and, like, jump out and use the assault rifle from Halo and shoot bad guys on the ground, but that doesn't make any sense. That's not what I would want to play Halo, what I want to play Star Fox for. But there is a new Star Fox coming out, and it's being made by Platinum Games. It's called Star Fox Zero. I actually have great confidence in that because Platinum Games is a really, really good game developer. But anyhow... Nice.
I got something I'd love to see rebooted in a good modern day, but with a good director. It has to be someone who can be, who can appreciate it. I think Highlander can be remade.
Ooh, Highlander. That's an interesting choice.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
How would you go about doing that?
Highlander? Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's a huge question. I think it would be really fun to take that kind of a movie and apply, the original is fun for me because it kind of leaves a lot of open-ended questions and things that I like in certain movies. Have you ever seen The 13th Warrior?
No.
I'm a huge fan of that movie. I feel like they do a great job of letting the story be told. They tell a story without getting it, like without having to explain a lot. The characters kind of do exposition very, you know, you're very unaware of it. The way the relationships are built, they're built through the story. So it kind of just feels like a very well put together film. That's another movie I'd love to see get done, but I'm afraid it would never have the charm that this one has. But that's what I would do with Highlander, is I would kind of have a nice simple story and let the mythos be around it and not worry about trying to explain the quickening or explain the swords or explain why the lead character has a Scottish accent, but he's Spanish, you know, I like that part of it. You know, I thought it was pretty neat. I don't know. That's a hard question for me. That takes hours for me to think through that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that could probably use some sort of reimagining. But I think that was, I don't know, like, do we need just to, like, bring back those things? I mean, Highlander is what it is, but is it something that, you know, still has presence? Or, like, do we just need to bring it back for nostalgia's sake? Or do we need to retell the story because it wasn't very good the first time? Like, what's the purpose of a reboot?
You know, the only artistic, I mean, obviously the purpose of a reboot is to make money with a property that people are familiar with, but the only artistic purpose I can think of is occasionally there's movies that have a really good concept that don't have very good execution.
Yeah.
But those never get remade because nobody went to see it to begin with.
Right.
Which is why when people talk about reboots, I always think they should reboot It's Alive, but then I realized that they actually did, and I just didn't know it. I just looked it up because I was saying, well, they should reboot It's Alive. It's a great idea, and the execution left a little something to be desired.
Yeah, it's Alive, the
horror movie.
Yeah, but who directed that?
Oh, what was that guy's name? He directed a lot of.
It's not Peter Jackson's.
No,
that's Dead Alive. Okay, right. Oh. Yeah,
it's the guy who directed Q, directed.
Yeah,
he directed
it.
God Told Me To.
Yep,
hold on, what is his name? His name is Larry Cohen.
Nice, great movie. That could use a reboot.
What?
Q? No, It's Alive.
But I was just saying that It's Alive actually was rebooted, and I didn't know it. Just in the last couple of years. I guess, who pays attention to reboots of It's Alive? I imagine nobody even knew it was a reboot. You know, I remember it, man.
Steven Johnson was there.
That was like the scariest
geeks.
Cover.
I think that we can wrap up today's episode.
Let's wrap up with Paul telling us where people can see.
Where
the
can
improv
we find you? Where's your improv theater? What's your schedule looking like for the coming months or the future?
Oh, that's awesome. We are in Los Feliz, California, and you can check out our shows and what's going on with us at www.improtheater.com. That's improtheare.com. So it's not ER, it's RE.com because we're fancy.
Yes.
You can see all of our shows playing at around the city and where we're touring and stuff like that. You can also check us out on the Facebook. You can look up Impro Studio Theater and find out everything that's going on there. Click like on that, and then we can update you about different shows that are coming up.
Is that
Star Trek
the,
is back.
RE as well?
Nope. Impro Theater on the Facebook. Okay. Impro Studio Theater, RE on that as well, but on the Facebook. And that'll give you a schedule of what's going on. In March, we have Star Trek, The Improvised Generation comes back. Starting in January on Thursday nights, every Thursday night starting in January, we are bringing back for a regular show, Twilight Zone Unscripted. So you got a chance to come out and check that out. It's 8:00 on Thursdays at Impro Studio Theater. And there it is. That's what's going on.
Excellent.
Cool. Well, thanks, Paul. Thanks for being on our show.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you guys. I really appreciate it.
Well,
right on.
We appreciate it. It was awesome having you. So once again, I am Scott Pell, the Young Geek,
And I'm Steve Johnson, the old geek.
All right. Have a nice day, everyone.
And if you like today's podcast, let us know. Send us a tweet at oldgeekyounggeek on Twitter, or send us an email at oldgeekyounggeek@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.